everybody, and welcome. This is the Mazao Talks podcast, which is a platform for both knowledge sharing and peer-to-peer exchange between small and medium-scale farmers across Kenya.
We feature contributions by farmers, budding farmers, agri-food experts, as we drive discussions on good agricultural practices, as well as business opportunities that are readily available for the youth.
This podcast is made possible by the European Union-funded Market Access Upgrade Program, MACUP, which is implemented by United Nations Industrial Development Organization, UNIDO, and is produced right here at Semabox.
Yeah, so as we start, please remember to like, share, and subscribe on all our platforms. Our handle is at MACUP Kenya on Twitter, Instagram, as well as Facebook. For more information about any of the topics we discuss, please find us at macupkenya.org.
My good name is Jason.
I am Sheila.
And no matter who you are, you can farm.
In this week's episode, we are going to take a look at the full policy of Kenya towards getting Kenyan produce to the global market. If you're looking at getting your produce to the global market, then this is the episode that you have been waiting for. We have heard of programs like the Blue Economy and others. So today, let's hear about the Green Economy. Now with us in studio today is Mr. Joshua Oluyali from the Ministry of Agriculture. Karibu sana.
Thank you very much. My name is Joshua Oluyali. I'm the head of horticulture in the State Department for Crop Development and Agricultural Research, Ministry of Agriculture, Livestock, Fisheries and Cooperative. I've come here because of one reason, that as a government officer, we work very closely with our development partners. And that's how we came to collaborate with the MACUP, Market Access Upgrade Program, on areas of promotion of horticultural crops for export in selected counties across the country. So we have been collaborating in areas of sensitization, awareness creation, and also on areas of improving quality for the export produce. So today we are here because as part of creating awareness, the project requested that I do a small interview with the media team to be able to share some of the work the government is doing with the MACUP project.
Okay, yeah, and I think Joshua is a bank of knowledge. We were having a small chat before we started recording, and I'd really want you to tell our listeners like what your background is, how you started in horticulture till to where we are now, this year, 2021.
Yes, thank you very much. I think, like you said, yes, I've worked for fairly a long time, and of course, working for a long time means that also you have experience in various fields in the industry. So I have worked at, that time they were called districts, now they are called counties. That's where I started from. And then I worked at the province, that is Coast Province. And from there, then I moved back to headquarters where I've been for, it's a major part of my working life. So I've worked in various capacities at headquarters, worked in budgets. I was in charge of budgets for the ministry, the whole country. And we tried to bring in changes that improved our budgeting, the government. We also did a lot of planning, and that I was able to make some improvement also in our service delivery. But currently, I'm the head of horticulture, and horticulture is a big industry. I think it's the biggest in the ministry because horticultural crops take about more than 80% of all the crops grown in this country. So it is actually the biggest industry, both locally, domestically, and even when it comes to export, horticulture is now the leading export earner.
Okay. I'm just going to go straight into it. There's a very deliberate investment by the government of Kenya into tourism. I mean, we see all these campaigns with Magical Kenya every year. Do you feel or is there actually one set aside for agriculture as well?
Agriculture sector in Kenya is receiving substantial support from the government through direct funding from Treasury, but also through our various development partners. We have funding from World Bank. We do have funding from IFAD. We have funding from ADB, Africa Development Bank, and various donors. Actually, many donors, many of our development partner states like Netherlands government, German government, Sweden government, Japan, the government of Japan, and even US. US has come in a large way. So we are receiving quite substantial support, and the challenge is actually on us to see whether we can direct this support to be able to address the problems that affect this country, agricultural development, and also for our export partner market.
Maybe, Joshua, we could go a bit more into the number for what has been set aside specifically for marketing agricultural produce.
In the local market or in both local and export?
Yes, both.
Yes, I want to say that there are resources set aside for marketing. But as you know, this is a government has departments that work on various aspects of the economy. And we have a Minister of Trade, Minister of Industrialization and Enterprise Development. We have a parastatal called KEPROPA, which is in charge, which is responsible for marketing of Kenyan produce and in our partner states. So the budget for that is with KEPROPA, and I may not have the exact figure.
Maybe now we can talk policy. Can you shed some light on some of the key policy moves that the Kenyan government is making or has made in the last few years to market Kenyan produce?
The key policies that have been made, of course, to be able to market produce as a country, we have to, of course, develop our local capacity to produce. So the policies that actually look at both domestic and export market. And the one that we are implementing right now is called, we have a strategy called Agriculture Sector Growth and Transformation Strategy, that is SDGs. We also have integrated export promotion strategy, which is under Ministry of Trade. That one was developed specifically to promote exports of our produce in our destination markets. But also currently, we are also working on national agricultural marketing strategy because we've not had one, but now it's almost in the final stages of development. And together with that, I think we shall be able to have more opportunity to invest in development of our markets, both the logistics, infrastructure, and also being able to open up more markets outside this country.
Okay. What's the policy strategy for marketing Kenyan produce out there?
The one that we are working with is now integrated export promotions strategy. Mm-hmm. It's called INEPS. It's under Ministry of Trade.
Okay. What about trade agreements? Are there any that you can highlight?
Yes, I know we have very many trade agreements. They are both regional. We also have international, which is under the WTO. So the subject of trade agreements, of course, lies with the Ministry of Trade. But I know as a country, we have actually had a lot of bilateral agreements signed by many partner states. where we are required to exchange commodities. And most of the time, most of our agreements are actually for Kenya to supply agricultural commodities in exchange of other commodities like the electronics and so on. So those agreements are under the State Department of Trade, the External Trade Department. But as a ministry, because we collaborate closely, we are now working on a way of aggregating all that information together, of course, working with Ministry of Foreign Affairs to get that information aggregated so that we can be able to share this information with the counties for them to be able to produce and as we target those markets. But that information is not yet available, but that is what government is working on right now. There's a committee that has been set up to do that.
Okay. From your capacity, Joshua, what's the produce that you can say is a focus produce or the focus countries that we are working to improve?
Yeah, our largest market as far as horticulture is concerned is, of course, the EU. Now with Brexit, now we have the EU and the British.
Mm.
Mm. So we also have a very big market for flowers, Australia. And now the US has come in a big way. So we are opening, US is a very big market for a lot of commodities. And we are now looking towards opening up markets in the US. We also have the Far East, that is Japan, Korea, and so on. And of course, the Middle East. And the good thing is that most of these markets present us with different opportunities because what with the requirements for different markets are different. So we can be able to target them separately and be able to grow our markets. Like I said, the responsibility is on us. If you want to make sure the markets are there, but are we able to produce enough produce of the quality this various market destination desire?
Mm.
So that is what I meant by saying that we need now to put our act together, working with partners like Markup, to see whether we can set up some standards for quality produce that can go to those markets. But we have a market for fruits, avocado and mangoes. Passion fruits is a very big market, but unfortunately, passion fruits, we have challenges of disease in this country, which really is a difficult disease to deal with. The other big market we have is for vegetables. A lot of big market for vegetables. Then there are market for flowers, like to the Netherlands. And then we have also Australia, where we have a big market for flowers, but also the other emerging markets for other produce like the roots and tubers that we were discussing earlier, where there are very many markets like the Queen of England eats potatoes from Kenya. And of course, things like honey is very good. The honey that was used to preserve Princess Diana came from Kenya.
Mm. Wow, facts.
So we have a huge market for many produce from this country. Mm. And therefore, I said the responsibility is on us if we work together, all of us. Because the part of the work we are doing here is to try and encourage the Kenyans, all the value chain actors, to see these opportunities and be able to take care of opportunities. As government, we promise to continue trying to get markets, sharing information about the various market destinations, the requirements for the market, and of course, facilitating the produce to go to those markets.
Now, the biggest part of the export market is basically compliance. There are so many compliance pieces that are required in order for the produce to be allowed into markets that we all want to sell to. What's also problematic sometimes is that these standards have not been applied locally in Kenyan market, so farmers are having challenges in meeting them. It's an area that probably needs a lot of focus from both government and farmer or producer groups. Question: how is the engagement right now between government agencies concerned and the farmer or even producer groups?
Yeah, I currently, one of the, I want to say that our biggest weakness as a country has been weak linkages among all the value chain actors, starting from the market, going to the producers. So without having strong linkages among these partners, we have resulted in having a problem with quality and also quantity. Though the market requires this produce of this quality, that information never gets to the producers and the other value chain actors who handle the produce. So that is the first area that we have actually have a strategy on how to deal with that by organizing production and marketing clusters, that within those clusters, we are able to share market information that is demand and also the quality requirements. Then the producers are able to respond by producing, but with the support from the various actors and service providers. So if it is an issue about supply of seed, supply of inputs, they are assured of the supply and they also know when to plant for a certain market. So that is a linkage that has been missing.
Okay.
So if you're able to put up that linkage, then you're able to respond to the markets appropriately anytime we get new market, open up new markets. Because Kenya, all of us know that Kenya has very many agroecological zones, which means that we are able to produce variety of commodities for various markets.
Yeah.
So the only thing that has been lacking is that.
Okay. So we've visited a lot of farmers across the country, and especially with exporters, we hear a lot. I mean, this word comes up all the time. Compliance, 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 compliance. Question is, are there any programs that are specifically targeted to helping farmers achieve the required compliance standards?
Yes, there have been very many programs.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they focus on only on training. But the biggest problem that small-scale farmers mostly have is the quality infrastructure and also the skills to be able to comply. I'll give an example. If you talk about compliance to standards, you have to start from the quality of the planting materials and the services that will enable them to follow the good agronomic practices up to the end, up to harvesting and even post-harvest handling. You'll find that these facilities are not available. So the farmers can work very hard and produce very good produce, but how is it going to be handled? Discarded on a motorbike from the farm to the center. And it's tied in a very untidy way, in an inappropriate way. So by the time the produce reaches the center, it has been messed up. So when I talk about now providing support to producers to be able to comply to standards, it means that after the farmer will be able to produce following the required practice. But then when it is harvested, the transporter needs to know how to handle the produce. When it goes to the center, the person handling the produce at the center knows how to sort and store it appropriately. And from there, then it's supposed to be transported again in the right with appropriate vessels all the way to the market.
Okay. Let's talk about Global GAP certification in particular. What are the specific things government is doing to support greater certification of farmers?
On issue, we understand, like you said, that for us to access the market, you must have various certification. And one of them is Global GAP, which is a private standard, but of course it's mandatory because that is what the consumers want. So we also believe that getting Global GAP certification for individual farmers is expensive. And that's why we are saying that once we're able to organize farmers, then this is given to a group, not an individual. So that will be much cheaper. and every farmer wants to comply. So as long as they get the training, they have the various quality equipment, which can be able to be used to determine the market requirements, then we don't see a problem in our small-scale farmers complying. After all, the best deal that comes from Kenya for many years has been from small-scale farmers. It is because they have that kind of infrastructure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've seen that there are county governments going well and above the norms and using very innovative policy approaches to supporting production as well as supply chain issues. What do you think is the future of this?
The county governments, of course, are responsible for, they're the ones to implement agriculture projects and programs. So they are quite in order to be able to invest in this supply chain for various crops. But one of the things that we want to work close with the county government is to provide them with the various standards and designs of some of these investments that they are making, so that they can be able to comply the various market requirements.
Yeah.
I know they have invested a lot in markets, which is a good thing. But when you are going around the country and talking to stakeholders, the stakeholders are saying one thing. You are investing in markets for consumers, not for farmers. So when you build a market and it's a beautiful market, it's a four-story market, and the consumers, there are stalls there for traders to sell, that's a market for consumers. And it's a good outlet for farmers.
Yeah.
But now we need to develop a market for farmers. And farmers require a market that has facilities I've talked about here,
yeah,
where they bring their produce together. There's good sorting done, packaging is done, labeling is done, quality control is done, so that now we're able to go to the market with the right produce.
Oh, nice.
And of course, preservation.
Yeah.
So that is what we're calling aggregation centers.
Mm.
So we are in the process. We have set up... We are developing guidelines on how to set up this aggregation center so that they are standard across the country.
Okay.
And then we can be able to work with the counties for them to develop those kind of facilities.
Of course, we cannot talk about government without talking about issues relating to tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I know tax is a huge factor of production,
mm-hmm,
because that affects everyone, right, the small-scale farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, what about tax and tax incentives? What are the ones that exist that are driving the move towards greater compliance?
I think, let me start by saying that all governments run on taxes. Yeah. So we cannot provide free services. The government must get money, revenue, and therefore taxation is mandatory for governments. But having said that, I think the Kenya government has made a lot of provision to encourage compliance, because right now, agricultural machinery equipment and facilities are tax exempt. Mm. So if you apply as an importer of those equipment, you are able to be given a tax waiver and a duty waiver.
Okay.
Yes.
I wanted to find out, a lot of times we find we suffer because of lack of information. So I want us to talk deliberately and directly to the small-scale farmer or just a farmer in general who may not be aware of some of these exemptions. How can they take advantage of this?
As a farmer, I'm sure anyone is free to import if you have the money and you know where this technology comes from, you can import. So what you do when you're importing, then you write a letter to the Ministry of Agriculture requesting for duty exemption for specific items which you list down, and you provide other details about the invoice number, the quantities, and so on. Then the ministry will write a recommendation letter to Kenya Revenue Authority to recommend for duty exemption. So it would be upon the farmer now to use that letter to go there and using the Act, which I've talked about, Public Finance Management Act, you'll be able to get exempt.
All the farmers who are listening to us today, please make the Ministry of Agriculture your friend and visit there and get all the information that, you know, that you could possibly need, because lack of information, again, is a huge problem.
Yes.
So if you're a farmer out there and you're listening to us today, your best friend actually should be the Ministry of Agriculture, because there's a lot of information and opportunities that lie therein.
Thank you.
I have a question. Sorry, Joshua, regarding that. I mean, So you said, talked about the Public Finance Act and also being able to get exemptions. But I mean, if someone in Busia would have to come all the way in Nairobi, then these policies don't favor small farmers. Because, am I making sense, guys? Because now it's only the importers who are in Nairobi who would maybe eventually go and sell to the guy in Busia who are enjoying such a policy. But me, someone in my village in Muranga, they don't know, and they might. It doesn't make sense.
I get you what you're saying.
Yeah.
But you realize that if you're importing anything by sea, you don't have to go to Mombasa to get it yourself. You can use clearing agents.
Yeah.
So the same thing also when you're importing goods and you are in Busia, you work with the clearing agents who are in Nairobi, and they'll clear for you.
So Joshua, right now we live in a very digital world. We see things being digitized, new technology coming up every day. From the conversation we just had about, you know, if you need exempts, you have to come to Nairobi and deal with it from the national government. Are there any plans to have more digital services being offered in terms of for farmers, especially for exports?
Yes, I think with the technology, we cannot deny that we have to accept for a process of continuous improvement in provision of our services to the public. And therefore, I think this is a good idea. And we feel that as government, we embrace all these good ideas, and we see whether we can work with the relevant partners in government to have some of these services available online, so that farmers who are remotely placed can be able to make these applications online. I'm not promising anything, but I'm just saying that it's an opportunity for us from the idea we have shared here to moving in the future to see whether this can also be made possible.
Do you currently have any services being offered online or using technology?
As a ministry or as government?
As government, as a ministry, as a department. Maybe in your department you have...
right now, I think it's still limited, because after devolution, a lot of services have been devolved to the counties. So what you could be offering to farmers is, for example, what you're doing is just maybe information on these markets, market requirements, which are in the process of developing an information platform for my export market information, because we know that if this information is available to various counties, they're able to take advantage of those export markets. So that will include various commodities that are relevant to the project that we are discussing today.
Okay. Now we're talking about digital stuff. Maybe I could just move you a bit and ask you, from an industry point of view, what's the level of tech innovation and adaptation in the agribusiness space?
I can say the level of tech innovation is average, because we also realize that more than 80% of farmers are called small-scale farmers. And I think I know we have a very good penetration of internet in this country and mobile phone network. But still, you find that majority of farmers still use their phones that are not internet enabled. So we may be able to communicate using maybe the USSD code to majority of farmers, But online and tech, other technological advancement that requires internet, we may not be able to reach very many farmers. But one thing about farmers in this country is one, farmers share a lot of information amongst themselves. So it's an opportunity for us to explore. And I think the government is looking into that. So this is a lot of information that is given. You know, we have a ministry for ICT, and we'll be working closely with them. I know they are developing some form of platform for us we can be able to use to reach the various our various customers.
Okay. Would you say that we are getting close to finding the M-Pesa of agribusiness?
M-Pesa of agribusiness.
Yes.
We are finding, I think we are getting closer to developing a Huduma Center for agribusiness.
Oh.
It's closer.
Could you please tell us more about that?
Yes, when you talk about cluster formation and establishment of aggregation centers, that is that will be a Huduma Center for farmers, where they get all the services, including the market. So if they want information, they'll get from there. If they want training, they'll get it from there. If they want to know what is required to be planted and in what quantities, they'll get that information from there. If they want to know the market requirements, they'll get it from there. If they want services like land preparation services, pest control services, various trainings, they'll get it from there. And also the quality control, which is critical. They'll get it from there.
Okay. Maybe we can talk about situations where and opportunities where technology can come through for both farmers as well as the government. Mm. What, in your opinion, do you think this can be?
Yeah, I think if we have a good connection between all the various value chain actors, then the first thing that, of course, like you've said, information exchange. Technology, if it can solve the issue about information so that everybody knows what is required to be done and everybody does the right thing, that would be the first intervention that will create a lot of difference. The other way technology can also help a lot is because in this country, reason why we are also very poor in quality and production is because of skills. So we'd like to put some information on training, which is online, so that if you wanted to spray and you don't even know how to read and write, you can use some form of a demonstration where somebody can just open and see a demo. And he says, oh, if I want to apply my pest control products on the plant, first I need to do the scouting. Then you are shown how to do the scouting. And using some of the applications, you can put in the information what you have seen on in your field, and it tells you whether it is the threshold for you to spray or not to spray. And it can even tell you which pest to use, best pesticide to use. And then when it comes to spraying, there's a demonstration that is able to show you this is how you spray so that you do not have a problem of maximum residue, residues on your produce when you're selling. So we think those two areas can really improve because if we sort out the problem of the quality, the quantity of produce, I think the rest of the problems are not difficult to sort out.
What about disease monitoring? How do you think we can involve technology in that aspect?
Oh, yes, there is a lot of technology in that. And using the satellite images and also using the drone technology, I think drones take very good quality, very high resolution photographs of plants. And using various models that have been developed, I think you're able to predict disease outbreak even 1 week before it occurs. Mm. And the good thing is that with this technology, you can just be able to localize also where the outbreak is likely to take place. So you don't need to spray the whole field. Mm. You only go to that spot and you spray there alone. It's called precision agriculture.
We've seen some graphics and maps during the locust, during the desert locust outbreak.
Mm.
Is the technology that was used for this available to government?
Yes, it's available. We have ESRI, which offers the GIS in this country. They are located within the country.
Mm.
And we have worked with them on many other projects, like when we had a problem of when Corona, this pandemic started.
Mm.
I think we were able to use that work with them to map out the food available in the country.
Okay.
And they did a good job, yes. So, yes, it's available.
Since this technology is available, what do you think, what would you say is available to farmers to help them reduce pests and diseases?
Yeah, what you have with GIS and other satellite imageries is you're able to forecast before the outbreak.
Mm.
And I think that's what we did, the desert locust. We knew where they were, and we knew how they were moving into the country. Then you would go and position the aircrafts in those areas so that where they land, they are sprayed. So we can use that because once you organize our farmers, it is a service they can pay collectively.
Yeah.
And also government can subscribe some of this and then provide that early warning information to certain areas, which they can be able to use to now put control measures in place at the appropriate time before the outbreak gets out of hand.
So my final question would be, what about medium to low tech? Are there incentives available to help farmers move from manual farm methods towards more mechanization?
Yes, I think when it comes to majority of services that farmers get, one thing I want to say is that when it comes to providing efficient and affordable services, then it makes sense to promote those as businesses, so that instead of a farmer deciding to buy a spray pump, go and buy a chemical, a pest control product, come and spray themselves, they can hire that service.
Yeah.
So to reduce the cost of all these operations, I know many of us eat ugali and where we come from, we don't have portion meals at home, but we are able to make our maize flour at as cheap as even 20 shillings. But if you are to buy your own portion meal, I'm sure you'll spend more money.
Yeah.
Same thing applies to a majority of services. When you say that you are trying to reorganize the services, we would want, if I want the spray to be done and I don't have knowledge about pests, there is somebody who will come and do scouting. And then that person will give indication when it should be sprayed and what should be used.
Mm.
But then it will not be for me to spray. There'll be a service provider trained to just to apply pest control product at a predetermined fee for a particular pest per unit area.
Mm.
So if it's 1 acre, I know that when I call somebody to come and spray, the total cost of spraying plus the chemical used is 300 shillings per acre. So I just pay for that.
Mm.
But there's somebody to make sure that the right chemical has been used
yeah.
and the pest that was being controlled is the right pest. So that is what we mean by technology now.
Mm.
If we're able to do that, then you'll find that we'll bring down the cost, but also improve on efficiency and also on quality. Because the aim of using this kind of approach is because we want to train service providers who know the importance of using the right molecule for the right pest, because it has a market implication, it has a business implication. So because they are in business, they would want to follow all the required guidelines. And that way, we cannot have a problem of even using products from unknown sources like what they're getting from Uganda and Tanzania. Because who will they sell to? If the farmers is not paying, and this service provider cannot go and get a pest which is not registered to be used on a certain commodity. So we can be able to remove that and those contraband chemicals in our market. food systems.
Mr. Joshua, with your experience and as well as the position you hold now, I just want to know what would be your ideal situation, what heaven would look like for you, especially for the agricultural sector, both as an individual and as someone who works in government.
I'm looking forward to the day when I would want to see agriculture plays a rightful role that is addressing the poverty in this country. Mm. Agriculture can address poverty if and when all farmers, whether they are poultry farmers, whether they are fish farmers, whether they are crop farmers, they are all able to produce for the market. But they also know what they also understand what they should eat at home, and they're able to get enough money so that all Kenyan children born in this country can get a chance to go to school and complete school and be sure that because of the performance of agriculture sector, there'll be also job opportunities for them to engage in directly and contribute to the development of this country.
So there's a question that we always ask. This is also just to pick your brain. First of all, I would like to say, on behalf of the Kenyan people, thank you so much for your service. It's been a long time you've worked in this industry and at the ministry. I just want to say thank you. But you've also gained a lot of knowledge along the way and a lot of experience along the way. So assuming you mentioned that you're going into retirement in about 3 months. Assuming that you went to your bank account and you had $1 million, that's approximately about 100 million Kenya shillings, where would you, this is all for you, where would you invest within the agricultural sector specifically, and also which part of the value chain for that product?
I think for that, at the moment,
yes,
I would invest in avocado farming. And I would invest in two things, just two things. Setting up a high standard nursery for avocado seedlings, because I want our farmers to grow quality avocado. The market is big, reach the market. And also I'll establish orchards that can produce avocado, just those two areas.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.
All right, I guess that's it for this week. We just want to say a special thank you to all our guests for joining us today. Also, a big thank you to UNIDO under the EU-supported Marker program for making this possible. This podcast is made at Semabox.
Please remember to like, share, and subscribe. And for more information about any of the topics we discuss, please find us at markupkenya.org. Please like, share, and subscribe. And for more information about any of the topics we discuss, you can find us at markupkenya.org and on our socials, that's at markupkenya on Twitter, Instagram, as well as Facebook.
Wishing you guys a great week.
And remember, no matter who you are,
you can farm.